Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today we have a very, very special guest who's referred to us by another podcasting guest, Sarah Grillo. For those of you who didn't listen to that podcast, you probably should. And Karen Coyne, who is a certified financial planner with Raymond James, has been featured in Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Dentistry IQ.com. Her financial services practice does focus on those professionals, and she has a very interesting business model where she is not one of those people who is looking to bring in lots and lots and lots of clients, because she's so focused on the service end of that, which, of course, all of you know, really does feed the wheel and just make sure that that machine keeps going with really good referrals. But what she specializes in, something that's very near and dear to my heart, which happens to be vision. And when I was introduced to Karen, she had sent me this really great paragraph talking about what makes her unique and different with how she uses vision within her practice. So, Karen, welcome to the show, and let's start talking about vision.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. When it comes to this, when it, you know, people talk about vision all the time. They talk about goal setting and how, you know, in February, they're all gone and nobody's focusing on them anymore. How do you help people when it comes to vision really stick to it?
That's the million-dollar question. It is January, and so I have been thinking a lot about vision. And I think for a lot of advisors, we tend to think about the vision for our practice, maybe for our team. What's the growth that we want to see, you know, in our business, maybe in the coming year or 3 years or 5 years? But so I've been thinking, you know, what if we took that to the next level? What if we took that same kind of goal setting approach? Well, I mean, we already do a lot of goal setting, right, with our clients. But what if we really drilled down and kind of focused on this theme of vision with our clients? And again, not just at one meeting, but throughout the year. So honestly, it's something that I can't say that I have the magic formula down. It's something that I'm really looking at focusing on this year, and kind of taking a different approach with having this continued conversation with my clients to drill down about what their vision is. And again, for, you know, depending on the client, the vision could revolve around their family, could revolve around their career, obviously, you know, various financial goals, their health. So I just feel like, you know, as an advisor, we're in a really unique role to help kind of connect those dots. And I guess it's something, you know, I'm interested in to talking to you about with your experience as a coach and therapist. I feel like there's like a whole untapped territory as advisors that we are not, you know, we're not tapping into to help our clients really connect those dots.
All mend that. I cannot agree with everything you just said even more. So many financial services professionals just focus on, you know, their business, their goals, and those things. And they have that brief conversation. You know, it's part of your intake process for financial planning. You know, what are your goals, blah, blah, blah. That's all part of the, you know, six-step process that most of you financial services professionals, especially CFPs, take people through. But Karen, getting somebody to, one, share their vision with you, long-term vision, short-term vision, medium-term vision, I believe makes you a more effective financial services professional and changes that relationship. Because if I come to Karen, if you and I sit down and you ask me these questions, and I want to tease out some of those questions and the conversation that you're already having, but if our conversation is really about who I want to be when I grow up and what legacy I want to leave and you know, really what my goals and dreams are, and you help hold my feet to the fire, you just change your whole relationship with me.
Absolutely. You're right. Yeah. 100%.
I'm not going to come to you and say, well, gosh, Karen, you know, the S&P did 1.256% better than our portfolio. Who cares about that? Well, I'm going to sit down with you and say, hey, Karen, can you still help me, take that trip to Machu Picchu?
Yes. And, you know, it's so funny you mentioned that, because I don't know how many times I've had this conversation with folks about, you know, typically when a new prospective client, when I'm meeting with them, and we're talking about, you know, what their issues are, what's on their mind, what, you know, what brought them here in the first place. I don't think I've ever had someone sit down and say, you know, the reason why I'm here is I want to beat the S&P by 300 basis points every year, right? Yeah. No one says that.
Yeah.
At least not, I haven't run into that yet in almost 20 years. But what they do say is, right, they're concerned about their family. Maybe, you know, I just met with someone recently who his health is on the decline and his wife has never been involved and he wants to make sure that she's in good hands and that, you know, there's a clear plan that's laid out. She has someone that she's comfortable calling and, you know, just has a go-to person. That's the type of conversations that people have when you're asking them, you know, what is it that brings you here? It's mm-hmm. never about the performance.
Now, some people might be listening to this, Karen, and say, ah, this is a little bit more touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy than I want to get, which I personally think that if you are a financial services professional who feels that way, then you are always going to have the performance conversation because they're coming to
you as
a commoditized relationship where you're building a real relationship. Let's talk about how you open that door. So you're sitting down with somebody either new or an existing client and you realize that this vision conversation is so important. Would you mind sharing with our audience a little bit about the line of questions that you take and what techniques you use to pull that? I mean, you've been doing this for 20 years, and I don't know how much you've psychoanalyzed it, but I'd love to hear your process.
Sure. Well, in over 20 years, I can tell you that it's changed constantly. I'm constantly tinkering and looking for ways to improve the process. But one thing I've done in the past probably 5 years has radically changed the intake process / onboarding process. So, you know, if you're a potential prospective client and we're meeting for the first time, I am not pitching at all. I'm hardly talking other than asking all the questions. It's just a lot of intake. It's depending on the complexity of the client situation. It's, you know, maybe typically I'd say 90 minutes of it basically a personal interview, you know, and it's everything from the first question is, it's either, you know, what brought you here, you know, what are the issues that brought you here, and then it's, talk to me about values, you know, what is it that is most important to you about your money, what do you want your money to do for you, and that question alone typically hits on the core, you know, the core concerns, and again, that's where you know, what do I want my money to do for me? That's where no one's really talking about performance. They're talking about, I want to make sure that my family is provided for. You know, I want to make sure that I can continue to, you know, travel and visit my children and not really have to worry too much about money. I just want to kind of, you know, live freely and enjoy this freedom that I've worked so hard for as I'm, you know, pivoting or, you know, kind of phasing down, taking my foot off the gas mm-hmm. if they're still working.
So the values-based discussion is fantastic. That really does change the immediate tenor of the conversation. Let's fast forward, though. So you've had that conversation, and part of your financial planning process and what makes you different and unique is revisiting that in off times. Like, it's easy to have that conversation, Karen, right now, right? Everybody's doing goal setting,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. How do you bring that up later in the year? You know, it's August. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this year, like I said, I've been thinking a lot about this whole vision thing and how do we keep our clients connected long after, whether it's their initial meeting or it's the January meeting. And I don't know. I think there's a couple different ways to do this. I mean, personally, I'm planning on talking about vision throughout the year with clients in a number of different ways. You know, sharing podcasts with them. Like I saw that you have a number of that you've done recently here on goal setting and vision itself. So, you know, number one, I want to share some resources with them. I want to share, you know, whether it's blogs, podcasts, papers. There's a book, you know, that I'll probably share with some clients about goal setting. And even like a vision board, you know, maybe host a client event when we all, like you said, it might be a little too California she for some people, but how cool would that be? Like to get a group of people together and, you know, we're going to work on our vision boards together. It's not going to be for everyone. I totally get that. But I think for some people, it will really, really resonate.
I love vision boards. I can't believe more people don't have them. And if you don't know what a vision board is, just Google it. You'll see some really super neat examples of what vision boards could be. Karen, that's a great event idea. One of the questions I hear, or one of the things I hear from advisors a lot is that how do you deal with the emotion that surrounds people's money? And as a therapist, as you had said, that was what I had done years and years ago. We weren't really allowed to talk about money, right? Because we weren't allowed to give financial advice. And it was just a really sticky, yucky place that most therapists ran away from. You are that person, right? I mean, you're the only person besides a CPA who can have a legit conversation with people about their spending habits and, you know, their feelings surrounding money and those sorts of things. After you open the values door, how do you parlay that into your financial planning?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think part of it is just keeping the clients focused on why they're doing what they're doing in the first place, right? So you have this period that we just went through starting in October, right at the end of the year last year. And, you know, for maybe a client who gets panicked and wants to sell, I think it's a tool that you can use to reel them back in. You know, the reason that you have this portfolio is not to, it's not necessarily about the price or the performance that it's at today. It's part of a longer-term plan to support, you know, this vision that you have for your family or supporting your favorite charitable organization. I just think it's really important that we are able to anchor them back to what brought them to set up this plan in the first place and not lose sight of that.
Do you document that within your software? How do you track that? How do you go back? I mean, you know, we as people in financial services, we're always focused on a lot of things, right? The noise of the marketplace. How do you keep yourself focused as a financial advisor to maintain that quality of conversation instead of you being distracted on what happened 15 minutes before the appointment?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. One tool that we use, it's like you might be familiar with some of the mind mapping software. So we actually use a software called, I believe it's MindJet, and create a mind map that we call a total client profile. And it's basically all those really important pieces that we uncover in that initial meeting on one giant sheet of paper. And I'll revisit that with clients periodically. Not at every, like if they're meeting quarterly, I'm not going to bring it out at every meeting.
Sure.
But maybe annually or every, you know, every other year, see if anything major, when something major has changed, we'll update it.
Okay.
But it has those seven areas of that we cover in that initial meeting that, you know, the seven areas that are really, really relevant to their life. Everything from relationships to the values, to the level of engagement that they want. And so it's right there. I mean, it's literally, it's visual right there in color to remind us, you know, why we're sitting down at this table together. I think it's helpful for the client. It just is helpful for me as the advisor.
Well, we use MindMeister, which is, I mean, it's basically the same thing. I love mind mapping tools. Every time I show somebody a mind mapping tool like that, just the look on their face, especially if they're visual or if they like to see how A plus B equals C, those mind mapping softwares are fantastic. So we'll make sure that we put a link in the show notes about MindJet and MindMeister, which is the one that we use. Now, you've been doing this for a while, right? You said you've been doing this for about 20 years. If you could tell us what the biggest marketing mistake you made was, and then I want to flip it to what is the greatest success. But if you don't mind, can we start on the when you kind of fell down and scraped your knees and then dusted yourself off?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question. I don't know. I've probably made a ton of them, so many that I can't even single out. I mean, I feel like honestly the biggest marketing mistake is probably just we all have shiny ball syndrome as advisors. You know, and you and I had a conversation earlier about how the brain is aimless, and as human beings, we're all susceptible to that. But I feel like as advisors, we're especially susceptible to that. And when you're new, everyone wants to help you, and they want to help you by giving you all these great ideas. And then I think what happens is you just have paralysis. Well, should I do this? Should I do that? I could do this. Or you do the opposite. You know, you try everything and, you know, the spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. And so I think I did both. I mean, I tried everything. I did nothing. I think consistency, probably my biggest failure has just been a lack of consistency, kind of feeling like, oh, you know, if I'm in the business long enough, I'm putting one foot in front of the other, I'm doing a good job for my clients, you know, good things will happen. Well, it doesn't quite work like that. So that's probably been my biggest kind of aha moment over the course of my career is, you know, it's just, it's not enough. It's not enough. And thank goodness we have social media now. We have all these other tools that we didn't have, you know, 20 years ago to kind of help support that. But even so, still, you still have to have a focus. You still have to be consistent. It's still the same challenges.
So what is the success? I mean, what has made you, you know, such a top producer now? When did the light bulb or what light bulb went on that makes it so that you have achieved your level of success?
You know, for me, and I define success a little bit differently than you mentioned too earlier. For me, it's not about necessarily the volume. You know, we limit the number of new clients that come on board so that we really can truly serve the clients that we do have. And that, I think, just being in a position to turn away clients maybe is reflective of a level of success. So, you know, first off, I'd probably define it a little bit differently. But, you know, for example, this vision topic that we talked about earlier, this is something that I'm going to be focusing all year. And what I love about that is it gives me focus. You know, it's going to help me not throw all these shiny objects to my team and, you know, feel them roll their eyeballs at me as I'm going, hey, let's do this, let's do that. We're going to be consistently talking about this throughout the year. And I just love that it gives me an anchor and something that I can focus on. And again, whether it's through, you know, podcasts, blogs, social media posts, I just think having a focus, if you can find a particular area of focus, that could be really, really helpful.
Let's talk about how you communicate with your clients, because with this vision thing, there's going to be a common thread amongst all of those things that you talked about from communication. Surprisingly enough, when we were talking and we're kind of warming up for the podcast and me getting to know you a little bit better, you had said that podcasting is something you're going to do and you are active on social media. Let's talk about how you quantify those media or those marketing tools as success. Karen, we run into it a lot when we get a new client. You know, we ask that question, what does success look like to you? People are all over the board. Well, I want new business. Okay, well, then do seminars, right? Or, you know, do an aggressive referral campaign. This is marketing. This isn't sales. How do you kind of get that warm, fuzzy feeling inside that your social media and your podcast is going well?
Oh, I love that. And that's probably changing as well. But certainly you want to see engagement, I think. You know, you want to see that even just that there's a conversation happening or someone reaches out to you. There was one of the articles that I'd written for Medical Economics that you mentioned earlier was about basically not failing retirement. And that particular article resonated. There were so many doctors emailing me and just saying, oh my gosh, you nailed it. Or, you know, I really went through this myself. No one told me this. No one told me that. Or I saw this. My husband went through this. I wish that, you know, someone would have talked to him. Wow, that one really struck a chord. And that to me, you know, did it result in 50 new clients? Sadly, no. But there was a level of engagement that was still very satisfying. And I knew that it was because it did strike a chord, it was something that I could circle back to and kind of build on. So I think it varies. You know, it's not necessarily, and I also tend to take the long view. I'm probably a little bit more patient than most. But, you know, I don't expect the phones to be ringing off the hook because there's a great post or an article or something that goes out. It's, you know, in our business, as you know, it's a lot about planting seeds. It's about having those relationships in place. Right now, a lot of people are focusing on that next gen issue. You know, are we getting to know the children of our best clients, et cetera? So I think all those things are important. Like if we can get our clients' children to engage with us, you know, again, there may or may not be accounts that are flying open, you know, immediately off the bat. But I think that level of engagement is in and of itself a sign of what I would consider success.
We talk a lot about engagement, and the Business Prevention Department, otherwise known as compliance, really seems to like to slap your hand with engagement. But there are some really great ways to increase engagement and make your audience feel that there is a social component to your social media. What sort of stuff, when you do get engagement, do you do? Do you say, you know, thanks for liking, or what is your secondary level of communication after somebody comments on something? Like you were just saying with the article that you wrote, did you have a feedback loop? Did you reach out to them? Did you comment in the comment section? Would you mind sharing?
Sure. Yeah. In that case, most of the engagements I did receive was actually via email. So I was able to respond directly and, you know, start a conversation that way. Yeah, you're right. I mean, on social, the compliance kind of really limits some of the level of engagement that we can have to a degree. So I was fortunate that the engagement opportunities I've had have been more along the traditional lines of,
okay,
of email.
But how did that happen, though? I mean, now you just really raised my attention. So you wrote an article. What, did you have a call to action at the end of the article, or how did you get people to engage with you and email you?
I know, right? I don't think I did have a call to action, honestly. I think it was probably just because of compliance. I had those necessary disclosures, you know, the paragraph of disclosures at the end of the article, including my email address, I believe. So, so these folks just emailed me directly to share, you know, mostly just to share their feedback, mm-hmm, commentary on the article.
Well,
actually, maybe compliance did me a favor in that case because they made me include all my contacts.
I love that. And Karen, that's fantastic. This really just harkens back to something that we preach on this podcast all the time, which is great content gets engagement. That's really it. You write a great article, you know, that article is going to have that sort of reaction, especially if you're talking specifically to that niche, which it sounds like you were speaking their language so that they felt that Karen Coyne was a person who truly understood their specific situation. So yeah, maybe compliance did do you a favor there. That's pretty awesome. And the reason why I asked you was because I don't hear that very often. You know, we've got advisors blogging, you know, till their fingers bleed on their keyboards and, you know, getting published all over the place, you know, in Forbes or MarketWatch or, you know, Yahoo Finance, all of those sorts of things. And maybe it just really gets down to the fact that they're not having the right communication. They're not saying the things that they need to say. Would you mind reflecting on that article a little bit and talk to our audience about what you did write about that achieved a
sure,
really good feedback loop?
Yeah. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it was along the lines of Don't Fail Retirement, and it was from Medical Economics. And basically the gist of it was, you know, as advisors, we have these conversations with our clients. A lot of times it's so focused on, you know, are you saving enough money? Basically, gearing up for retirement all along the framework of the financial aspect, right? Are you going to have enough to pull the trigger, to pivot, to take your foot off the gas? And what's totally neglected are the other 80% of the factors that need to go into consideration, you know. And I'm not saying that, again, that I'm a psychologist or that we should be licensed therapists, but as you mentioned, we do wear this role. And we're also in a position to identify, I think, some flags or if someone might not quite be ready. Maybe they're financially ready, but they're not emotionally ready or socially ready. And so some of the things I talked about in the article is that, you know, when you're thinking about preparing to retire, don't think about it just along the financial lines, especially, you know, this is written for physicians. As you probably know, when you're in especially like a high level or a specialty type field, your identity is so tied to your work. And so when you retire, it can almost be like this loss of, I don't want to say an identity crisis, but it's a loss. It's really difficult. And people tend to underestimate, I think, how connected they are to their work. So anyway, what I talked about was, you know, here are some different things that you can do or to at least consider before you fully retire. You know, if you're if you think you might want to start a business, for example, in retirement, maybe you try doing that a little bit on the side before you actually retire. See if it's, you know, test the waters and see if it's something you actually enjoy doing or that you're good at. You know, friendships. Are you maintaining your friendships? Like, who are you going to spend time with when you are retired? A lot of times, folks aren't having conversations with their spouses. And so they may have a vision of what their retirement is going to look like, but they have not shared that vision with their spouse. And their spouse may have a completely different vision of what that's going to look like. Or, you know, you have cases where two people have hardly spent any time together over the course of, you know, 20 plus years because of work. And now, here they are spending 24 hours a day together. It's a little bit of a shock to the system. So
yeah.
Talked about some of those types of things that you need to consider kind of in terms of gearing up for retirement. And, you know, and then as well, some of the things like depression that can kind of crop up that you need to be maybe ready to identify that, you know, retirement isn't always a rosy transition. For some people, it's challenging.
Gray divorce and, you know, that sort of what are you going to retire to?
Yeah.
I believe are the conversations that you as a financial advisor not only need to be prepared for, need to practice, but also need to have those conversations. Well, Karen, I can't thank you enough. I thought today was a whole bunch of fun. You're freaking awesome. It was great to have you as a guest. I love your vision focus. The idea of, you know, talking about engagement and conversation, you know, making sure that you're taking people through your own version almost of a vision board, which is that mind mapping tool, doing a vision seminar. I think you'd get a lot of people who would sign up for that. And you definitely seem to have the personality that you could pull that out of your attendees. Any closing thoughts, any other words of wisdom from a marketing or branding perspective that you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap it up?
Thank you. I have really enjoyed being here today. No, stay tuned. I mean, I'll continue to blog and share articles, and hopefully if compliance lets me, we'll be launching this podcast soon, which is called Fresh Off the Vine. And yeah, just look forward to continuing the conversation.
Well, Karen, we'll make sure that we have links to your blog and links to that podcast when it does go live. Just keep us posted on that. And thank you very much. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast, click that subscribe now button below. And we'd really love it if you just take 2 seconds to review the podcast by giving us just some feedback on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, SoundCloud, all the places that we are. That would be fantastic. We'd love to hear from you. And rating the podcast, as those of you know who have a podcast, really helps you out when it comes to search engine optimization. So for Karen Coyne, this is Matt Hallin for Top Advisor Marketing, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz. A platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at iris.xyz.